Okay, we are calling to order the Administrative Control Board meeting for Mountain Regional Water. It is 6:09 p.m. We are going to start with the 2022 rate study presentation with Susie Becker and Steve Anderson.
Hi, Susie. Thanks for joining us tonight. We've got your presentation pulled up on the screen. So Chris can just scroll through it as you, if you'd like to have direct him that way, so you don't have to try to share the screen or whatever. Is that okay?
That's great. If it's working, let's go with it that way. That sounds good.
Hey, I'm sorry, Steve, but I don't understand where we're at. Did we have public comment?
Well, last month we had the meeting, then noticed this is the official rate hearing and put the rates on our website and things like that. So we have to notice the public and then give them time to respond. Nobody has emailed me or spoken to me since we did that. So this is the official rate hearing for Susie to pretty much go through the presentation we went through last month, but just for the public to have a chance to comment and participate.
So Mike, first week, Susie will give her presentation and then Karen will open it up for public comment. That will be the second part that anybody can.
The agenda now,
that's number three.
Got it, thank you.
Uh-huh. All right, Susie, go ahead.
Okay, well, thanks for letting us work with you all. I know you've got some background in rates already, so I'll go through quickly. But, you know, when we do rates, we're seeing a lot of communities, districts looking at increasing rates right now. And a lot of the reason are the increased capital costs and the inflationary costs of operations. Rates do need to be, increased from time to time or adjusted. But we're seeing quite a bit of that right now. We want to minimize impacts to ratepayers as much as we can when we do this. We want to have two measurements we keep in mind are to maintain at least 180 days cash on hand. And the other metric is that we need to maintain sufficient debt service coverage ratios. Whether or not you are planning on issuing debt, you want to have enough coverage so that if the need comes, you are in a position that you can do so and keep your bond rating. And we just want fees to be easy to understand, implement, and collect for you. Okay, so you have seen why we need, on the next slide, we're going to see some of these capital costs, I think. So they're significant, as you can see. Just one thing I want to point out here is they're not the same amount every year. And that makes it a little more difficult in structuring rates because cash flows will go up and down a little bit. Our days cash on hand, we've got some pretty big years there in 2024 and 2025. Okay, the next slide is going to tell us a bit about our potential rate increases. So we're proposing that in 2023 calendar year, we do an immediate rate increase, and it is 8%, followed by another 8% the following year, 5%, 8%, 3%, trying to keep those down, but a little bit of a rate increase every year. So, you know, what are we seeing in other places? We are seeing the same type of pattern. Some choose to do a big rate increase the first year, followed by maybe inflationary 3% per year thereafter. Some do it just like exactly like you're doing with, up and down just a little bit to try and balance the rate increases with when they need those capital costs. Where we're really seeing the high rate increases is in the electric power companies, municipal power companies. But we're seeing it all across the board with all kinds of utilities. Okay, so on the next slide, you can see what this actually does to the numbers. So right now, you can see the categories on the left. Let's just do residential, 6180. A month that would immediately jump by 8% to 6675, and the next year it jumps again by 8%. And then not quite as much, we go the 583. Going forward, same percentage increase across the board for all of the categories, and you can just see there what that does to the rates that people will be paying. The difference between 2022 and 2027, 5 years out, is fairly significant when you do that multiplier on every year, but you also have significant cost. Hey, that's for your base rate. So what happens to your usage rates? The next slide shows us the proposed increases there, and they are proposed at the same percentages that I just showed you on the base rates. You want to have a good balance between the two. You always want to keep your base rates up there enough that it gives you a little less risk when you have drought years up and down, if you have a good solid base rate, and then as well as charging some for usage rates. You're familiar with those. Obviously, the different tiers you're in, the more you use, the higher are the cost per 1,000 gallons. And that's typical in most communities, the water conservation measures. Okay, on the next slide, I want to just talk about days cash on hand. So in terms of a bond rating, you want to keep at least 180 days cash on hand. At one point, AWWA was saying, try to keep it up, you know, over 200, 275 even. We're in that range. You know, the bond folks in our department tell us that if you go below 150, that's the very bottom, you're going to lose your bond rating and you really want, or it's going to go down and you want to stay at least 180 days. And this does that over time. These are good numbers for days cash on hand. Okay, next slide. I think this is our last one. I'm not going to go to in this one in detail, but you have several reserve type of funds. And we just want to point out that we are maintaining all of those at your current levels. Going forward with these rate increases, that it will do that. So that is it. Do you have any questions?
No, that's pretty straightforward. It looks like an 8% for the base and the tiers. Paul, do you have any questions? Oh, never mind. That's not the right time. Sorry. Okay. No further questions.
So no questions on that. Then I would like to open this up to the public and any public input on the new rates. Any update, Rick?
I just asked him if he wanted to make a comment, to please give us his address. And he has not responded. He's muted. He's allowed to talk. Muted right now.
Sorry, but the chat is disabled, so I can't punch in my address. But I don't have any questions at this time.
All right. Thank you for participating and calling in, Bill.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. It's important that everybody participates where they can.
Absolutely.
Okay, at this point, we need to consider approving the 2023 water rates and fees. Do we have any comment, or would somebody like to make a motion?
Is it the 2023 or 2023 through 2028?
This just said 2023.
It's just 2023. We prepare for 5 years, but we will review it to make sure it's still necessary or if there's some kind of change that may need to take place.
So it's pointing just towards 2023.
Yeah.
Correct. I move that we approve the 2023 rates as presented tonight.
Second that.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
Mike? Okay. That's unanimous. Great. So we have 2023 rates, and do we still need to run those by the county council?
Not formally. It's part of our budgeting process with them. Okay. So when we presented our budget, we explained these to them. So if they didn't have any questions, they won't.
This board approved rates, the county council. Great. Okay, let's move on to the consent agenda. Does anyone have any question or any comments on the meeting minutes from last month?
Not at all.
Any questions on the check register?
I have a couple. Bowen and Collins, the Pine Meadow evaluation and master plan, those are separate?
Yeah, two separate efforts.
Okay. Yep. And are those the last invoices we'll have on those, or are those the master plan ongoing, right? Yeah. About the evaluation for Pine Meadows.
Pine Meadows should be wrapped up.
No, we'll get a couple more invoices, but yeah, they're trying to wrap it up by the end of the year.
Okay.
So we should see, I guess, probably two more.
Similar question on the Laughlin Water. Well, John, Is that bill final, or is that report submitted?
On Bill's desk is the latest report, so we'll hopefully get a draft shortly.
Okay.
And then same thing, I'd suspect one more, two or more invoices.
Okay.
To wrap that up. With that.
Sounds like there might be some insights from that might be worth sharing with the board.
Yeah, I'm excited to get a draft of the report. We went met with JB and Bill. It's over a month ago now, but just kind of talked over preliminary findings, and I think I'll be useful to the district.
And that's where we decided if we're going to pull anything, we're going to brush and bail and camera and do things like that. So that was kind of part of that.
Fair enough. There was a charge from Sidewinders on the AC motor repair well 15C. Is that one of the wells at 5 and Bluffs? Where's 15C again?
Yeah, it's over by 15.
It's right by my house.
It's your well.
Yeah.
That's just the order.
Okay. Everything's okay though.
Yeah.
Okay. And then related to that, at one point early on in my tenure, I felt like a figure went out with all the wells and like critical infrastructure in the district. That would be helpful to have that at hand. I was looking for that and I just can't find that.
Like just a list?
Map.
Yeah.
Spatial, yeah. Just showing where everything's at. Just, I couldn't remember where that was. I was guessing. So I thought we did give me something at one point, or it was one of the packets years ago. But it's not mandatory, but if you have something easy, it'd be helpful.
Do you want access to a drive, or do you want it in a printed form? What format are you looking
for?
Yeah,
just send drive. Yeah, electronics, totally fine. And then hydro specialties, endpoints, adapters, associated with Badger meters, but it's not Badger. What do they do? Or are they the ones that they manufacture Badger?
They're the official reseller in Utah, where you buy all your Badger equipment.
Okay.
It's through hydro.
The endpoint is the reading device for
it. It's the cellular part that goes on top of the meter.
There's a whole bunch of separate charges for that. It's like the adapter could read off
the
Badger.
Yes, it's a cellular reader.
Okay, and we're getting close on that, like replacing everything through the district. So now we're just going in and fixing ones that are broken.
A lot of this is new construction.
Ah, okay. Right.
But of course, that'll be an ongoing problem project.
Yeah.
Useful life.
But yeah, to answer your question, yes, we're actually done with the change out.
The initial,
getting everything. Yeah, I think there was one meter that.
There's one holdout that
one
hold meter fit in, and it's now in over in Silver Springs.
Okay.
Yep. Or community water.
Yeah.
Sorry, community.
Right on. So 4,000 plus.
Good work. Good effort. That's it. Coming.
Anyone else have questions about the check register?
Oh, yeah, two quick ones here. The share of the legal cost on Sitaway, was that a yearly thing?
That was a one time. We were trying to solve a long term problem, but we ended up creating a bigger issue. And so he went ahead and engaged Biden Snow based on conversations that were had. We've decided just to keep everything per the original agreement. It may cost us some maintenance costs, but this was going to be a $40,000-$50,000 project that would be a lot of pumps and repairs. And so we kind of felt like we let him down a path that he had some costs. So we just threw him $1,000 to satisfy
him. And the SKMA, what is that?
That's the SCADA integrator that we use.
Okay, because there was quite a few charges on there. And again, I say that the definition on the checks is a lot better. You know, it's improved. So I don't have very many questions on it. But this one here, I was...
Yeah, it was a large one. And it included a lot of hardware, some stuff that got installed at the treatment plant, some water quality stuff for the state reporting. Was part of that invoice, as well as a number of well-level transducers, which are 1,500 to 2 grand a piece over the lengths.
But what kind of company is SKM? It seems like they do a lot of different stuff, from the reading on the checks.
Yeah, well, so they're our SCADA integrator. They're the ones that we use to make big changes to our SCADA system from a programming side, and troubleshooting like problems with motors and other electrical related things. So
this isn't a yearly thing. This is something where you had them come in and integrate facets of the system mm-hmm. into SCADA.
Yep.
Hey, Chris, did you work with Mark Jepson there?
No, we work with Alan Rogers.
Yeah. SKM does a lot of work for water districts, a lot of sewer districts. I see them around a lot. They're pretty good. There's only like two or three of these kind of guys in town around here.
Thanks, Mike.
Tim, any other questions on the check register? Joel? I also had a question on FKM, but it looked like we had, you know, close to $100,000 from Lost Canyon supply between Mountland, Nickerson, Waterford pump and Rocky Mountain valves. So I just wondered if that was just typical for the end of the season or.
No, in the 2022 budget, we built in some extra expenses in Lost Canyon because we knew we were going to do a lot of that this year. Some of those expenses and invoices just came in recently. So that's part of why our budget was higher in 2022, but we didn't actually have a budget in 2023 in Lost Canyon. That stuff is going back down to more of a normal level.
Okay, great. That was all I had on the check register. Are there any purchase orders? I didn't see any.
No.
Okay.
I have a question.
Yes.
Do we anticipate between now and the end of the year any expenses that we need to talk about? Or are we, things are pretty much in line?
We try to look at anything that's outstanding. We don't want to carry into the next year.
So, for example, there's to the best of our knowledge, there's nothing in Lost Canyon for not from now to the end of the year.
There's nothing planned.
Thank you.
I can't give you 100% guarantee.
No. I understand that. But I mean, we could always be surprised, correct?
Yes, and hopefully we're prepared that it won't have an impact.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Luckily, it's not in Summit Park, so.
We won't talk about Summit Park.
We're going to talk about Summit
Park. All of the Summit Park.
We have a motion to approve the consent agenda.
So motion to approve. Ken. Yep. My God. Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. That's unanimous. Let's move on to the 2022 capital project bid opening results discussion.
There you go.
Do you want me to open this?
Yeah, please. So we had exciting bid opening season this year in a positive way to frame it. But we can flip through the memo that's within the board packet. Thanks, Chris. So the first project is the Summit Park Tank project that's been in the works for over a year now. And we discussed a lot in board meetings, but just as a reminder, it's a critical piece of the Summit Park system. It's currently undersized for its equalization volume and certainly undersized for the build out of Summit Park and Discovery, because it also serves as storage for Discovery. And a big part of the project is also a new chlorination system that solves a problem we have with an existing chlorination system that's currently tied to a booster pump station. So we came into 2023 with our estimate was about $1.6 million. And the tank bid that we received came in at $2.4 million. And there's the budget figures there for you. There's a little bit more that's going into the revised budget. Steve can talk about that in the next section. And then just a brief update on schedule. We're not looking to award any other contracts during this board meeting. If we were to move forward, we'd do so at the December board meeting. We got one responsive bid on the tank project. There were two parties at the pre-bid meeting. So the one bid we did receive was bid into a competitive format. So we have that going for us. It is from FX Construction. They specialize in concrete storage tanks and come highly recommended from Aqua Engineering, who's been working on the tank project for well over a year. They currently doing all the concrete storage tank work over at Mayflower, which I think is a half dozen tanks that they're putting in all together. And it's a contractor we were targeting to that would be a good fit for the project. So we got the bid we wanted from a contractor we think would be a good fit and would be good to work with. Just the pricing was well over the estimate to the point that you know it comes down to a price point I've honestly never seen for a drinking water storage. So that's the first piece. The second piece
that does help that issue pull that chlorination system that's underground right now at the booster station, right?
Yeah, it's
all eliminate a safety risk.
Nice. Safety risk. It is more difficult to control dosage because you're dosing into a live fluoride situation through the pipeline.
Yeah.
There's more potential for overdosing chlorine. There's lab customers between the booster pump station and the tank. The tank chlorinator will also chlorinate a larger volume of water. It'll help carry residual farther to those in the park. And overall, it's similar to the system we put in at the spring tank that's been rock solid and I think a good approach for the district where we have so many disparate sources, it doesn't make sense to chlorinate at each individual point. So these centralized tank mixes, I think, are a really good solution for the district.
And there's a couple things that we need to keep in mind with this tank.
Mm-hmm.
Summit Park is challenging. We need to take down a metal tank that's currently up there. So there's either fire mitigation or other considerations that have to be had. You really can't mobilize and stage a project up there. We're not putting in a conventional round tank. The narrowness of the streets. So you add in all of those extra factors or you subtract those out. The mobilization alone and the bid that we received was $250,000 because the guys are going to have to set up and tank down. The idea would be to take the current metal tank down during the cooler winters, early spring, so we don't have a fire risk. We could maybe look at some of the architectural features on this tank to not give it the wood-like component. It's probably not going to shave off more than $100,000. But, we're trying to compare this tank bid to something that's happening down in Mayflower, which is wide open at a normal elevation, round tank. So we look at, initially we looked at it and thought, oh, that's just ridiculous. But when you back into really what's there, there are other factors in this tank that don't change, regardless of inflationary pricing conditions. So just be mindful of that as we consider this and consider the benefits of replacing.
Well, why did we decide to put board form concrete on it?
It was part of the CUP process with the county. It's in a residential neighborhood. It's a stone's throw from two folks' primary homes. So we're trying to fit the aesthetic of the neighborhood, make something that's an improvement on the aesthetics that are currently at the site.
Because the contractors indicated that was something like, board form concrete on a tank that size, if you're standing out on the road, I bet you don't even know it's board form concrete.
Yeah.
That just looks great.
Yeah. Yeah, we're
so are we putting a lot of money into something or something that's saying, hey, if this was in a park and we had a kiosk, we put board form concrete, but we put it on something that big, it's just going to look great.
Yeah.
It's quite close to the road. It's right on the property line.
So now you know this road, it's like, why?
You can tip the broom over. And
It's close to both sides, and there's a new house that's supposed to be constructed across the street as well, which could also present challenges to our construction.
But is there anything, I took a look at the bid, and they have numbers in there that they're putting a lot of risk dollars in there, like traffic maintenance, for example. Is there anything that we can do that could share risk where I mean, if they don't go out and put any traffic cones up or anything for months, we're still going to pay them, right?
Yeah.
And they're not going to try to step up. There's not a lot of cars and drive on that road.
There actually are a lot of cars on that road. That's the primary access to the Crestview Trailhead. That is it's a highway.
And it's more of a flagger than a...
Is there any way that you can see that they put a lot of risk dollars in there? And I don't know if it's because they call around to whoever is supplying the tank mixer and found that they were the only one getting a quote for it, which made them think that we're the only one bidding on this.
Well, the other thing is, from a dollar standpoint, this is a relatively cheap project compared to other work that's out there right now. And we had people that didn't bid because of that.
I think that's a big factor. When I heard they're doing six tanks at Mayflower, you know, I think it's just the market.
I know there was a conversation with Gerber that said.
Yeah, so I tried to reach out to as many contacts as possible, and folks I've had success with the district has in the past. And most of the larger outfits weren't even interested in downline plans.
This is a pretty big miss by the estimators. I mean, it's.
Yeah, no way around
it.
It's a big miss to us.
But you add in these other factors.
Yeah, I know, but I'm just saying that, is there something we can do where we're getting their line items on there and what they're putting in for a full risk dollar? Is there anything we can do to help them mitigate some of those risks and do more on a time and materials or a unit cost type of thing? Because if they go over the unit cost, you'll be paying it, but you only would do that if you think, I'm just going through here on 9 months, how many dollars are we going to be asking them to put out there for traffic control or something? And if it doesn't add up, then you can go back and renegotiate at least a line item if you think it makes any sense from a risk standpoint. Because, you know, what Aqua put in there, and I'm sure they're a very knowledgeable firm, but the stuff that they put in their letter there for why these things would be over, they aren't exactly unknowns, right? I mean,
no, that's fair.
They're talking about the schedule. I don't think the schedule's an unknown. They were talking about having to cut up the thing and not start a fire, right? Well, okay, they could stick by there with a garden hose, right? Make sure they're not starting a fire. And then it's got constraints and the tank shape and all this. That isn't something that just kind of sneaks up on them. They knew what the tank shape was. They knew that it was a constrained area. So the only thing I'm asking is why wasn't their estimate higher to reflect this stuff so that we might make decisions on whether we wanted to go through with the project or not based on, you know, if it was like $2.5 million.
Yeah, no, I think that's all fair, Tim. I don't think there's a clear cut or good excuse for how bad a miss it was on the estimate. I think it's a lot of little things that added up to push the price higher.
And I agree that it's hard to come up with board form concrete at that size. It's usually something that's done in a smaller architectural level.
Yeah.
But to do an entire tank like that and do board form concrete, that's a lot of cost on there, and it's just, you have to answer to yourself, is it really worth it?
Yeah, I think that given the cost, it's likely not. And, you know, the two things we have, the two obvious places to start, I think, in value engineering the project and hopefully getting the cost down are, one, the any sort of architectural facade aspects, you know, supplying concrete. The second is on the chlorination system. Those numbers came in coming high. So I think that's something the district could potentially source and provide, and then change that out of the contract if the contractor is amenable to doing so, which I think they would be. So those are, again, our two things I think we'd move forward with doing. But to Andy's point, I don't think that's moving the needle too much on total project cost. Maybe at most we could hope to get somewhere around 10% cost savings, something like that.
If you can save 10% on here, that's a $250,000.
Yeah.
I mean, that's worthwhile.
I would say so.
I don't know that it's there.
No, I think that's the best case scenario.
Yeah.
And it's going to still require, it's going to require more staff support. Do we have that?
Yeah, I mean, we'll throw, this is the most important project in the district this coming year, so it'll be the priority.
We just brought someone on for that, didn't we?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. This may be a dumb question, but what if their estimate is too low and they come in too high? Let's say I'm just making up numbers now. Let's say it's $1 million. And they said, oh, we moved. It's $2 million. What's going to happen? I mean, is there a ceiling? Is there, does it make sense?
Yes, it does. But you're asking if it does make sense.
Yeah, I think that's always a risk with any project. It's some unknown or change in condition.
Well, what do you think, though? I mean, do you think it's a good estimate, or do they go ball to get the contract? If that makes sense.
Well, actually, they're on the higher end. It's more than we originally thought.
Well, really?
Oh, yeah, by significant amount. And so that's, you know, we can see if we can sharpen the pencil and save some. But again, I don't think it's, if it's, I mean, $250,000 is $250,000. That's mobilization, that's the rework cost.
There's not $250,000 in traffic control. They're not, I mean, that's, that best you can be able to claw back maybe a quarter of any one of those items in there. And some you can't do anything with. It's just, it's equipment purchased, and what are you going to do there? It's just, I was just more curious about the estimating capability of the engineering firm that would come out afterwards and say, have these aha moments that, hey, it's not a round tank, it's in a constrained area. That didn't seem like that was hidden from anybody, yeah. Particularly if they were doing the design.
Yeah.
Do we know why the other bidder didn't bid?
No, actually, we didn't get any feedback from
it. Hey, but, Tim, you know, one of the numbers that we used to use was $1 per gallon to build storage. And, you know, it might have crept up to $2, but this is close to $10 a gallon. So, you know, I think that's reflecting the market. And if they're could make more money somewhere else, you know, they'll stay there. I don't think they're gonna give a lot, but I don't think they need to. I think they know that.
I think you're right, Mike. But
well, we could ask.
You can try.
Yeah, you can try, but it's usually doesn't.
Well, there's a letter from the. There's information from the contractor when Aqua went to the contractor and said, why are your prices so high? They didn't write a letter back, but I think Aqua went through and characterized what the comments were. That's where you would start. If they're saying, hey, it's really risky because we've got this architectural treatment, then I'd say, okay, put it on the side that the roadway's on, but not the side that's facing down towards Salt Lake City, and get me some money back on it, right? Because it's going to look gray on the one side and look gray on the other side. And it isn't until you walk right up to the thing that you'll notice that it's poured form concrete. So if you use just their own words to say why it was so expensive, start with that and see if there's something that you can cut out. You can't change the shape of the tank, right?
Not really, no.
Restricted by property size. But is the bid high enough now that you could go to the county and say we are going to deviate from residential policy?
I think the cost is a justification to go back to the CUP process.
Potentially, you don't even need to just take it all out of their words.
Or make it smooth and go out and print some board form concrete on it with a roller.
They do a community project and the kids come to it.
Choice words.
your kid can buy a lot of paint with that money.
I could have fun of that. So that's the tank project. Appreciate everyone's comments.
Yeah.
We keep moving on to the waterline portion. Similar narrative here. But just to remind everybody, we identified kind of Woodland Loop for our priority waterline, tackle in Summit Park. Collaborative project with the sewer district. We're very excited about building that back up, you know, after the county kind of abandoned their efforts for improving in Summit Park. We scoped the original project to be a similar sized effort with previous phases. And since what we've seen in the construction market lately, we elected to kind of knock it in two phases in an intelligent way where if we got really good pricing, we could potentially do both. And if not, we could elect to just do, you know, a little bit over half of the project. And that's the 7A portion that we're talking about in this memo. We also had some additional paving requests from the county. And kind of at the last minute, the last few months of the project, they also are potentially going to participate in cost sharing to put the paving back in place. So that's another nice aspect of the project. So we're rolling $660,000 over into 2023. And the lowest responsive bid for phase 7A came in at $944,000. And it's a little tricky to tease that number out of the bid schedule, kind of how the cost sharing breaks down, but that's the approximate number. So $950,000 plus or minus. So just keep that in mind when you're looking at the bid tabs. The lowest responsive bid is from MC Contractors, district of a long history of working with MC since way before I was here. A successful project in challenging environments, including Summit Park, so they know what they're getting into. And it's a similar situation. It is the lowest response bid came in much higher than our estimate. And we have a positive recommendation from ADM Partners attached to the end of the memo as well. So that's the waterline pitch.
What made the other two bidders non-responsive?
So we received one bid that was quite low. Half of about 50% of the other two bids. They were missing project references and a few other things that are required in the bid form. The references that really would sit up to me because we really wanted to investigate when we saw the pricing. And they gave them an extended deadline of a couple business days to submit those to the district, and they elected not to do so. So they essentially took themselves out of the running by not having a responsibility. That's what happened. MC did respond and filled out the rest of the everything else that was required in the bid form, checked out, of course, bid bonds, the whole deal. MC and Extreme, another contractor in the area that we've had success with, and it's a lot of promontory. MC and Extreme were actually quite tight. The bids came in within about 10% of each other, something like that. So that was a good cluster and good feedback, but MC ended up being a little bit cheaper.
So the low bid couldn't come up with references?
Basically, Lord chose not to. Yeah, probably chose not to. They were provided the bid form, so a summary of all the bids when we asked for them to complete.
Well, they knew what the other bids were?
Yeah. I think they may have ducked out the rest of the bidding process. But yeah, they seem like a smaller outfit based out of the Ogden area. Couldn't find much information on them.
So is that normal practice that when you don't have a responsive bid, that you give the bidders what the prices were and ask them to fill in so they know where they stand on the price before they decide to give you the responsive information?
That's the way we thought was the best approach, given all the contract documents were structured up front end of the specs, right? But
because if I was a contractor, I would purposely leave stuff out so they could get a look at what the price is of the other bidders before I decided to give you the other information to make it responsive. And it just seems like that's something is maybe a little wrong with that.
No, that's a good, really good comment. I didn't think of that, but I also don't think any of these contractors probably were that forward thinking. Also, or I would be surprised. But yeah, that would be a smart thing to do. I agree.
Because you realize that these guys were just like a dollar less than the other ones. They say, well, it looks like I got a good bid. If nothing else, I could subcontract it to these guys because they could get it done for just a dollar more. So I got, you know, whatever the case is here. And they might give you the information that would get them over the line.
Yeah. No, that's a good comment. I don't think that happened in this instance.
Do you have to give the prices at the time to the bidders when you're asking for a more complete package? Is it important that you
were legally required to?
Well, Sam,
I think that's what Sam was saying. Yeah, but German policies wouldn't say that we can or have to do that. I think it was a decision by
the engineers
and EDM engineers to try to make sure we could get a good, if it was going to be actually a good bid or not.
Yeah, go ahead, Mike.
Hey, can you guys hear me? So I think the procurement rules require we open those bids in public and read them aloud.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So they would have known then, but if they weren't at the public opening,
then we provide a bid form there. Yeah.
You provide the bid summary to them.
Yeah, or the bid summary, you know, whatever you want to call the document, but generally a redacted form of the bid schedule, the actual contract document from the front end of the specs. Yeah.
Yeah.
It seems appropriate in the name of transparency, right? Otherwise, you could just pick your favorite contractor and.
Yep. No, yeah. Public bid opening is a critical part of the public.
Well, and we're required to take the lowest bid unless we have a reason for it to be non-responsive. Then it's not. Isn't it low bid if it's non-responsive?
And helping construction is legally a non-responsive.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if you get the nature of what I'm talking about, if they have an opportunity to improve their bid afterwards, after they've taken a look at the numbers on there.
If they can't change their dollar amount.
I know they can't change their dollar amount, but let's say that contractor came in and was in that same category. So they said, okay, it looks like my bid kind of checks out. And all they have to do is give you the documents that they didn't give you before, and they've won.
No, I
don't give you the documents that they're saying $1 million less, and they go, oops, I must have left something out. Then they just don't give you the documents in there.
But they still get all those numbers if they did win, hypothetically. And if they're not close, they can choose something.
It's the process that we're using where we don't pick their responsiveness and say, they're responsive or not responsive, and then you just don't open the dollar amounts other than the ones that are responsive.
I think that's a good comment. I think next time we should consider doing it the opposite.
I think that's still consistent with transparency, that they have to be responsive to have their dollar amount.
Yeah.
But I know in instances we've read the bid and the math was wrong, and we didn't know until we'd gone back and the engineers had gone through every line item to make sure there isn't a math mistake.
Sure.
And then, you know, so I guess it just
depends. That's the procedure I'm familiar with is we open them, read them aloud, just the total amount, and then we send out just the totals, and then we go back and, you know, evaluate them and check the references and check the math and check the bonds. And there's, you know, to determine if it is responsive.
And we have bid bonds, right?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
They do not provide one.
Everybody provided it.
I didn't think they did. They were low bidder.
But regardless, yeah. 5% yeah. is our typical.
Okay.
They bottom out our finance. Yeah.
Okay. Any other questions on Sam reports? Thanks, Sam. I know that's probably not fun to put that
question. Well, this kind of leads into what I'm going to talk about now, then in the agenda, if I'm not mistaken, how it flows. So with the bids coming back higher than planned, we could still do those in 2023, but we need to change the budget that we've submitted to the county because we're asking for more money to be spent in our capital budget than what we had told them a month ago. The additional request is $1.81 million, as you'll see there, maybe read in the packet. 1.3 of that for the tank, 500,000 of that for the pipeline replacement. So we have to go back and change the budget we're submitting. We can fund it from money we have on hand. 434,500 of the tank would come out of the impact fees because the tank was part of our impact fee facility plan, and 30% of the cost could be allocated to impact fees. So since the overall cost went up, the 30% of that can go up. $759,500 can come from capital reserves. This is our capital repair and replace fund with the state of Utah. We have communicated with them. They said yes, even though it's part of your impact fee, you're doing it partially for growth. It's also old that you're replacing. So it fits in both categories. So we could pull some of the money for the tank out of that as well. And then the third piece is we can, now that 2022 is getting closer, getting to the end, being a little more aggressive to with what we're really going to think. We're going to generate a little more money out of 2022 than we'd originally projected or told the county in our budget. Not a big deal, but yeah, we're going to make a little more money than we thought. So with those sources, we can financially make this happen if we still want it to. But we will need to go back to the, so on the next couple of slides.
Wait, can we, so what is the cash available from previous years? Is that in some kind of bucket somewhere or?
It's kind of in our operating reserve that we keep that runs around $9 million. There's just more will be in that. So about every year we'll produce roughly $1.5 to $2 million out of operations to fund capital projects. When we were first looking at 2022, we thought this would be about 1.8. Now we think it's going to be about 2.4 because we're doing better than we thought in some areas. So it just kind of gets, some of it is the district capital reserves is a very specific account with the state, but a lot of it is just in the operating reserves. That makes sense.
But the district capital reserves are separate from the cash available.
Yes, exactly.
So, Steve, procedurally on this, we heard that the bids came over. We don't have to do anything as a board to approve those higher amounts, right? All we have to do is approve.
Well, you would approve the contracts because the Karen would have to sign the contracts or give the ability for
like in the next meeting or something?
No, yeah, our next meeting. So we kind of have to go backwards. We have to now get approved through the county because we're changing our budget to be able to pay them. And then if the count, our budget gets approved, then you guys would in December approve the contracts and we could get them the notice of award.
So all the monies that we're talking about on these are $2023?
Yeah,
just capital. Yes. It doesn't change our 23. Like our profit and loss, or let's say revenue and expenses for 2023, but it does change our capital budget for 2023.
And we're scheduled to go before the county December 7th, and our board meeting's the 9th. So Sam's part was informational. Steve's is a request for an action item if you want to move forward.
I do. I say, yeah, I think we should.
Okay, so we have a motion from Mike to move forward. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous.
Okay. We don't need to go through the rest of my slides then.
Great.
Good job, Steve.
Hey, I had one more question on fire protection. I get the time of year reduces the risk, but will we have fire protection, or how do we achieve that?
Yeah, the highest storage tank in Summit Park is the largest at 700,000 gallons. Yeah, we could theoretically still provide fire protection anywhere in Summit Park via okay. the various control valves in the neighborhood.
That one's significantly oversized, right? Like,
it's interesting.
Never been. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the smallest. The pressure zone that sits under tank 3 is the smallest area.
The original agreement was to provide fire flow for fiber.
From that tank. I've never had the answer on that because it's supposed to be even. Yeah,
just the balance guys. In the original agreement.
Okay, got it.
All of mine, bro?
Yeah, I think just have a few technologists that are part of
that. Okay. That is really well done.
You need a few makers after that.
You don't want candy?
You deserve a break today.
You're good on board.
So we're on to number 8, consideration of a recommendation of the governing board to approve the district updated water rules and regulations policy.
Okay, so I just realized that my memo does not have the red lines behind it. So we can table this.
Will you summarize?
I summarized it, but I didn't have the actual red lines behind it. So if you guys are okay with approving it without looking at the red lines, okay, if you would like it, we can move it to December. It's not, there's no time, there's no pressing issue. We're in the middle of summer, summer is kind of why we wanted to do it, to change the leak adjustment was really the reason we started this process. But
Owen, I was very comfortable with the summary. I thought it was extremely thorough, so I don't necessarily need to look at the red lines.
Okay.
Unless it's
Dave Thomas has approved them and made his own. I'll say largely it was clarifying in nature, similar to the procurement policies. And really the driving factor behind it was the completion of our meter replacement. So we now have visibility to people's leaked water versus having to wait for a monthly bill cycle in order to have those kinds of adjustments. So that was really the main reason for that. We didn't want to allow adjustments to be made on the full bill of the water, but more just on what the leaked water is, which we can see now in real time.
Yeah. I read these a couple of days ago. I had a question on section 3.1.L, which is abandoning water infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, was this for a lot joined to another lot or?
Yeah, so occasionally we'll have someone that originally thought they were going to have a lot and they'll put a restricted use covenant on that lot, which means they do not have to pay a standby fee. If they do that, then we require them to abandon the infrastructure that was there so that we don't subsequently go back and use it. There's been some ambiguity, I think, in the past about what that means. So we wanted to make it very clear in there that the district would need to approve the abandonment that's taking place.
Is that recorded somewhere, though, so that if somebody buys that property, they're not surprised, like, oh, yeah, I guess there's no water.
The restrictive covenant is recorded on that lot.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. But it could be reversed in the future.
It could be.
They have to pay all the backs and uh-huh. fees and interest charges.
For all the time that they
yeah.
have. For all the time that they have to restrict.
It's them. Not really a benefit unless you're never going to build.
Unless you really know that's never going to
yeah.
be used.
There's not a worker.
There are a few in Summit Park yeah. where it's like they put a driveway across a portion of the lot. And so they, right. So it's two adjoining lots. The lots are steep. They put a driveway across them. Another one, so they just put a restrictive covenant on this one because it's not physically possible for them to really build on it.
Hey, I can see so, that one.
Yeah. And that's the majority. There's a few other ones we have around, but the majority of them are in Summit Park that we have.
But Summit Park is, we've had a couple who have come in and paid that all back to the tune of about $13,000 to be able to now go back and build on that lot during this year. As Summit Park has become high demand, the whole area, and being able to build on steeper slopes seems to be what people think they can do. So
40 in Summit Park, right, in total?
Yeah.
So that's where most of the restrictive covenants take place and where people have actually come in back in and paid all of it.
Wow. Okay. Good info. Thanks.
Yes, Mike. Yep. Mike.
I was going to say, yeah, were you just going to take us through a kind of this summary? Is that where we're headed?
Yeah, if you want me to, or I can table it to the next meeting since the red lines weren't in your packet. The actual red lines. I just had the summary in there with the flow charts. So you let me know what you want me to do.
So we can either make it to approve it or we can table it until next month.
Yeah. And I can go through it then.
I'm comfortable making a motion to approve based on the summary provided.
Yeah.
Okay. I can walk through that each bullet point.
I've read through it.
Okay.
Is there anyone that has any questions on this before we ask for a motion to approve it? Hearing nothing, is there a motion to approve the changes?
So moved.
Second.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, that's unanimous. Thanks, Mike. Okay, great. Then we're on to number 9. Consideration of approval of the distribution, transmission, treatment technician, lead technician, and manager job description, and the lead technician training program.
So that's a mouthful. Thank you. This has been a work in progress, and we shared some of this with you in a draft form at the end of last year. What we've been asked for and what we've heard feedback from our operators is really wanting more of the ability to advance and grow in their careers and take on some more supervisory roles. And we wanted to allow that that kind of growth and opportunity for them. So Scott Morrison and I had started working on this and talking to Central Utah Water and others to try to define what that would look like. It's taken a little bit of time, and I apologize to the operators that we haven't been able to move as quickly as we would have liked. I wanted to do this earlier in the year, but it's the end of the year and we're here. And I think we have some good job descriptions now that have been reviewed by David Warnock, and he did not have any changes. I agreed with them as I presented them to him. We did have manager job descriptions previously, so those largely remain the same. We just defined the job responsibilities a little bit more detail. The lead technician and the technician, we now have those job descriptions by transmission, distribution, and treatment. So those specific job responsibilities are in each department. Like I said, we've been working on this for a while, from the supervisors to the employees to this level, to Andy's been through them, David Warnock's down through them. So I feel pretty comfortable. We were able to get the training program put together that we liked. If you wouldn't mind going to the 9A, Chris. Andy and I really worked with the managers and the departments and Brian to help come up with a formal process that we thought would work so that we could get those people who would be in the technician role to that lead technician role. If you can go up a little bit, Chris, down, I guess. So we're thinking this is just a distribution lead operator training. They're largely the same. They differ slightly just of the operations done in each, but what we're thinking, and this will take approximately a year to go through the training program, employees will need to apply. So there's an application I've created that the employees who are interested can put in, and then we will go through a selection committee to see who's selected for that year. You do need to have 4 years as a certified water operator. And in the distribution department, 2 employees will be eligible each calendar year. In the other two, in the treatment and treatment and transmission, because those departments are so small, we can really only afford for one body to be missing a little bit of time. So we've just designated one in each of those areas. Each employee will need to take on a lead project. So that could be a work on a capital project we're currently underway, or another area or project in the district that they'd be interested in kind of taking a lead on or a part in, and then presenting what that project was at the completion of their training program. I will help administer it largely just to make sure that they're completing the assignments. The manager of each division or supervisor, manager, excuse me, will be coordinating time for them to spend in these different departments. So if you go down a little bit, the program steps, we've asked that they receive the highest certifications in their respective areas. We'd like them to get the backflow administrator certification, a Class A CDL driver's license, and go through a rural water utility management class at 16 hours. And there's an exam at the end of that. And then each one of those areas or one of our departments in our administrative side of the house. And we just thought really just spending a couple hours or a half a day with each individual manager in those positions to kind of get a feel for what does Steve's day look like? You know, what are his hot topics? What is Anna doing? What are Jackie? And what are those? What does it look like when you're interacting with customers? So I just kind of, you know, detailed each hours again. You know, we'll just help track those in kind of a spreadsheet and make sure they're getting everything marked off. So I think we think that, a year is about the time it would take. I think it's going to be a great way to help provide the employees with those that want to take that next level in their career, to provide them with an opportunity without feeling like they need to leave the district in order to do that. So I think this will really help our retention and continue to really make this a awesome place to work and a valuable place for people who want to be here. So, and I think our guys are excited about it. I know some are going to apply. So yeah. So we're just looking for this does not need to go to council. This is simply a board action to approve the job descriptions as they're currently are, or if you have any changes to recommend those.
I just had a question. So do they have to do this training? Do they do this training through Mountain Regional, or do they have to do it on their own time? Or
yeah, they'll do it on the clock, if you will. Yeah. They will do it, you know, when we're all here during business hours. If they wanted some of the online, the rural water utility, I believe, is online, so they could do that, you know, but we would still pay them, you know, while they're taking that course.
They just have to coordinate with their direct supervisor to make sure if the time worked for both people. I mean, Lisa will administer the program. She will not babysit the program.
Yeah.
We're looking for people that are self-starters that are wanting to do that. So if you can get it done in 8 months, if you can coordinate and go and look for these programs, more power to you. If you need to take the whole year, that's fine too. But I mean, the district is not a place where there's much room for upward movement, right? Yeah. But unless someone moves, so that we think this is an opportunity for them to learn, for us to cross-pollinate throughout the district and give people different ideas of what other things are available, what does the budget look like, how do we do a capital budget, what does POA look like, and things like that. So hopefully they'll appreciate that. And like Lisa had said, we work with Lisa and Brian and Brent and Brandon to come up with this. So I think it's a good positive thing that will kind of fill that gap.
Yeah, I think it's really fantastic. And I love the whole program. I love the whole idea of it, everything.
Thanks.
Yeah,
it's so good that I was thinking we need a mini version of it for board members. I think a lot of value would come from kind of shadowing and other individuals. So,
well, I can certainly make that happen.
You should apply.
It will be an application process 1 year.
responding at 2 a.m. to 15 below for a break.
That was Sunday morning. I have pictures.
There is something in there about a 1 hour response time, isn't there, on all these
descriptions? Yes.
Well, the job description, but how far out is that? I mean, what's the geography when you're talking about 1 hour? What do you
so Waylon lives up Chalk Creek, and we had a leak Saturday night, Sunday morning in Hennepin, in Summit Park, and he said it took him about a 45-minute ride.
And there was no traffic, right?
Yeah.
So when you put an hour on there, does that mean it's going to reach all the way out to Salt Lake City?
So technically, I mean, to get to the district, you'd have to get to Promontory within an hour or Silent Park within an hour, right? If you're coming from Salt Lake, that's the district boundary, or, you know, the Salt Shed or wherever.
So it's a pretty large boundary.
Yeah.
Awesome. Do we need to make a motion to approve it? To approve the job description? Okay. Do we have an emotion?
We move that we approve the job description. I don't remember what all the definitions were out there.
And training program. I second that.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Aye. Aye.
All right. Unanimous. Fantastic. Great work, Lisa. Aye. This is really going to be a game changer for us.
Yeah, I think it'll be good.
One more.
Number 10, yeah, one more. We have a backflow administrator job description. So Andy emailed everyone earlier that Stacy has accepted our project coordinator position. So as we, and I think you mentioned working through how we're going to facilitate that, we just wanted to make a few little minor tweaks to the backflow administrator job description, really, really small. One of the things that popped out, we are currently going through a review of that backflow process. And one of the things we're doing is looking at the software capability potentially in CityWorks or a standalone program called Syncta.
Yep.
Syncta that can help us administer the backflow program in a much more robust way than we're currently using Cassell, which houses our billing and accounting. We've had a training on it with Sandy City. And so I don't think our records, where they may have been more written in the past, I think we're really going to be able to go electronic with this. So anyway, that might be for another presentation another day, but I just wanted to strike the written because I think we're going to go electronic on this. We are also talking about to streamline this process, making the due dates for backflows to be all at one time, where right now they kind of go from the beginning of the summer to the end of the summer, and we have different dates for each different backflow. So we think accordingly, notifications are going out monthly, you know, on a rolling monthly period that can create, you know, a lot of work. So if we were to kind of stick that to one date, whether that be an irrigation one date and a, you know, fire suppression the next, then we would kind of have a busy season, if you will, on that one time getting notifications out. But it wouldn't be this constant battle that you're struggling with, which Stacy, and now that we have so many backflows, 10,000 backflows or something that we're dealing with, is just becoming too big of a burden. So we're trying to streamline some of these things, and we think this notification process that we're looking into and doing it once a year is going to be much more efficient. So that's the change there. And then the other change was just having someone potentially help.
Okay. Hey, Lisa.
Oh, yes.
On the backflows, you know, I think a lot of homeowners, customers have to, you know, hire a plumber to do that. Is there a window where they can get this done, you know, once we issue them the notice, how much time do they have to respond?
Yeah, and generally people are getting them done in the summer because they generally, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, Anna, but they have an irrigation and they would have a fire suppression, so they can get them both done at the same time during the irrigation season. So it generally happens over the summer. There isn't a lot going on. I mean, there's some fire suppression that you can do in the commercial stuff, right, in the winter.
Right now, you can pick which month from, say, April to October for your irrigation when you wanted it tested. We okay. just want to say, I don't care what month you do it. Mm-hmm. We're only notifying you once, and we want it due by this date. Instead of Ken yeah. gets a letter in April, yeah. Tim gets one in May.
That makes sense. I like that. That's good.
Does anyone want to take a guess on how many backflow connections we have?
10,000.
Making sure you're pretty. Sorry. 76.
Really surprised.
Strike that. That's straight out. You don't go looking.
Yeah. It's a lot of prevention.
So we modified this slightly to just say continue to help the public service staff with service orders and other tasks. We were being a little specific and, you know, maybe a lot more along the lines of what Stacy was doing, but we just want to make this more general. And then Stacy was able to provide some feedback on about how much time she's spending in the field and outside, and it is about 50-50. So we've updated those percentages. So if everybody's okay with that, then we would just need the your approval, which just needs to be by this board, to update this job description.
Motion to approve the backflow administrator job description as reviewed.
Sorry, good.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
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 Okay, it's unanimous. Great. Okay. Okay, now we're on to Fritz for consideration of the approval of the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company Memorandum of Agreement Amendment for Old Fail Water.
So the one that you guys approved earlier in the year didn't really contemplate the situation that is now occurring. At that point, everybody's just sort of assumed that we would be wholesaling them water, that they would be, you know, sort of on the tap all the time. They were able to find their leaks, and they no longer need to be on a continuous feed from us. So what this is allowing is for that process, which we hadn't contemplated. We're sort of kind of going back to what we were doing before, where we're allowing them to run a volume of water credit so that they have I think it's 250,000 is what we had in here, and allows them to sort of bank that amount of water. Once they get beyond that, Brian and I will work operationally at the end of the month to basically keep that at 250 and not go beyond that. So you guys understand, we have 19 or 20 customers that are in Stagecoach that sit on Brody's tank, on the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company tank. We use it for pressure. So those customers, when they flush the toilet, open the tap, their water is technically coming from Pine Meadows. So with our customer meters, we're able to monitor and quantify that volume every month. And that's where he's getting his credit from. And then if we have leaks, he's very aware of the volume in his tank. And any of that stuff is also sort of captured and contemplated in this $250,000 or 250,000 gallon credit he's going to get. And then anything beyond that, we'll just boost back to them, which is pretty easy.
So you've just written this to reflect what's actually going on?
Pretty
because much. Because I didn't have the other agreements when I was looking at this and saying, if that doesn't happen, then you go to some other agreement. But if this is just saying this is what we're doing right now and it makes sense, then I'm fine with it.
Yep. Yeah, it's just to sort of solidify and get into writing what we've been doing for the last few years anyway.
And Dave reviewed this?
Yes. Yeah. And their attorneys reviewed it as well.
Does anyone have any other questions on the agreements? Does anyone want to make a motion to?
We'll make a motion that we approve the first amendment to the memorandum of agreement for Pine Meadows.
mutual water company.
Hey, hey,
yeah, Mike.
I'm trying to understand this paragraph three. I think it's all about this true up process. And I get that we've got a ledger and it's a it goes negative is volume of water taken by the district. Can you go over that again, please?
So we have about 20 customers that sit directly on the pressure from the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company tank. And we have the ability to boost water into that tank from our preserve booster. And as our customers that sit directly on his tank consume water, he will end up with a credit of water, right? So he's basically supplying our customers with up to 250,000 gallons worth of water. Does that make sense?
Right.
And then beyond that, at the end of every month, because we have live readings on our meters, we will boost any credit that he would have beyond that 250. We will boost that volume of water to his tank in the latter part of the month to make that true up to as close to 250,000 gallons as we can.
So it's a water ledger, not a financial ledger.
I was about to ask, is there something in the other agreement that establishes what the cost is per 1,000 gallons back and forth, or is it parity and you're just paying back and forth with water alone?
So this is allowing them to basically have a small bank of water to use
for an emergency.
That's the purpose of what this is after.
So those 20 customers, I mean, if they use, 60,000 gallons a month, they might use 120,000 gallons, about half of the 250. Is that kind of what you're
saying? The highest months in the summer have been about a total of 40,000 gallons.
40, not 60. Okay. Yeah. So
yeah, that's for all, and Mike, that's for all 20. That's not per customer.
Understood. Wow. So it's 40 for all 20 of them.
Correct.
There's no irrigation.
Yeah, nobody irrigates up there, and most of them aren't there, round the clock. There's still more cabin-type usage. Yeah, I want to say there's maybe five year-round.
Yeah. So is there going to be about 210,000 gallons a month that is sort of just surplus? Why is the 250 so big then if they're only using 40,000?
It was just to give them an emergency credit. Does that make sense? It's to give the Pine Meadows Mutual Water Company 250,000 gallons that they can sort of consume at their discretion without having to pay the agreement rate that we established earlier this year.
So they found their leaks, but they still want 250,000 gallons a month.
They're just going to carry. It's not going to happen every month. It's just going to carry forward. So we would only boost them the 40,000 gallons of consumption beyond that 250. They would hang on to that 250 to use in an emergency. If they had a big leak because their capacity is only about 15 or 16 gallons a minute out of their sources right now.
It also gives us a number to quantify. This is the most we'll give or take. It's not an open-ended spigot.
Right. We're just paying back what our
basically running the water to those 20 customers through the tank.
Yeah.
And we're paying it back and they can still take 250,000. Does that reset every month, that bank of the credit in the water bank?
No, it would stay. Once it gets to the 250, it'll just stay there. No. Until they use some component of it, right? Until they have a demand for it and ask us to boost, to top off their tank at 100,000 gallons or something.
Right. So, let's see. So, I think I got it. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that's good. That helps. I'm still kind of confused about so they could take up to 250, and then they would say, hey, look, you used 40,000 gallons and we'll just pump that back to them. Is that right?
So they wouldn't buy that at the going rate. They would just get.
Yeah, because we established rate for them to have to buy water from us because we thought that's what the relationship was going to be. Now, in a way, they don't need water, but our customers are still taking water from them. So it helps us to just be able to balance that in water than every month having to try to make it perfect, figure out who owes who money for.
I think that's what I said was that we just pump it back to them.
Yeah. Okay. So our customers use so much, we'll send that back to them. They'll kind of have this 250,000 gallons that in a pinch, they know they can use that without all of a sudden kicking in. So they got to buy it at our interruptible rate and things like that, or whatever their agreement was. So just, it's a good partnership to exchange money water instead of money.
Okay. Thank you for helping me understand that.
Chris, how does that transfer actually happen? Is there somebody up there on the phone and the tank says start pumping down there at the preserve and they tell them when to stop?
No, we actually can see their tank.
Oh, you can?
Yep. Okay. Yeah, it's part of our SCADA system. So when we became a backup to their tank, we integrated their tank level into our system. Okay. And they have visibility on our meter, not our customer meters, but they do have visibility at our SCADA meter in the pump station that tells them how much water is going to them or how much they're losing.
Hey, Chris, I just have one more comment on, it's just kind of the editorial here, but we say, once the credit reaches 250,000 gallons, the district shall, I think that we could say, instead of boost, you could say pump water.
Okay.
I mean, that's what you're doing. It's boosting, but I think to the rest of the world, it's maybe a little more clear what the boost is.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll change boost to pump water, and then do we have a motion to approve this with that one minor change?
I thought we already approved it.
Okay, so.
And I'll second it with the minor change.
Okay, so all in favor?
Aye.
All right.
Aye.
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 Okay, thank you, Mike. Okay, great. So we are on to Steve.
All right. So now that we've updated through the close of October, looks like we're going to come in about $1 million better than budget by year end. About 1.16, a combination of revenue of about $450,000 better than budget and expenses about $700,000 lower. $700,000 sounds like a big number. It is, but a lot of that is power because we didn't send as much water. And the other is a lot of actually employee costs because of some delays in hiring and some empty vacancies in a position. So that's kind of where we ended up in this position. We did take drought rates off. So everybody's back to their normal rates for October revenue. If you could scroll down a little bit, Chris. Retail water sales are actually slightly above budget now. Promontory, Raw Water, and Park City are still running below as they've taken less water. Golf courses definitely use less water this year. Development-related collections are still above as a total. But impact fees, we have brought below budget, which we've talked about. We did get a surprise impact fee in already in November of a little over $100,000 that we thought was going to be paid with prepaids back here in Silver Creek. but they actually just decided to buy them right from us. So that's going to help us come closer to budget by the end of the year. We go to the expenses, go ahead and go down a little bit more. You'll see the savings are pretty consistent across operations, maintenance, and non-OMER. We've corrected the interest expense error in our budget we've given to the council that's in the budget amendment. Let's go ahead and go on down a little bit more. Cash, our cash position remains strong, very similar to last year. This is always kind of the highest cash position of the year. We've collected a lot of our summer sales and things like that, but we haven't made our big payments to Weber Basin, the $1.8 million, and capital projects are often finishing up now and things like that. So we're at kind of our high water mark for cash for the year, probably. And then customer growth, down a little bit more. So you'll see we're up to 262 connections so far this year compared to 390 last year. Our impact fees are at that 1.26 compared to 3.26 last year. So still seeing the trend of after interest rates went up, growth is really slow. Almost all of that took place before or through July, and then it stopped. Promontory is at 65 lots sold this year compared to 110 for last year. All right, let's go ahead and go on down. Water usage. Our customers used 40 acre feet basically in October. Last year, they used about 41, so pretty similar. For the year, if you come down just a little bit more on our customers, this is kind of an interesting number. So our customers use 1,593 acre feet or 519 million gallons. Last year, it was 608. The year before, so 2020 was kind of our last year that wasn't influenced by drought or us asking people to conserve. When you look at 2020 to 2022, you can see how much our customers have really dropped their usage. You know, I did an analysis today for Lisa and Andy, and it's about 36% if you compare 2022 to 2020 that each of our individual customers has decreased their usage. So some nice work by our customers, I think, along those lines. Capital budget, nothing big is happening right this. More of it's now planning for next year. The projects we've kind of completed this year are really about. We still have one more truck. We're hoping to get one that we ordered about 13 months ago. So we're hoping to get that in before the end of the year. Let's go on down. So revenue, if you'll recall, last month we had that weird where August and September were very similar, how that purple line went almost straight across. October, you know, kind of the irrigation season's over, rates are all back, and we went right back into where we kind of expect for our October revenue to be. And if we look one more slide, you can see for October revenue, we were $12,000 under budget, but basically right there. So we fell back to kind of predictable usage levels and predictable revenue levels. So that was the results for October. So the good news is that we are going to end up about $1 million better than budget. That's where we're helping find the extra money to pay for the increase in the tank and the line, along with reserves we have. Any questions about results for October?
It's a great summary, Steve. Thank you.
All right.
Okay, so we are on to Lisa's comments, the progress in the customer survey.
Did you want to talk about?
Oh, yeah, sorry, tentative budget. Just so you may, I sent out an email after we did presented our budget. The county council is taking a step back, reevaluating COLAs and merits. There have been some different ideas. They're looking to decrease those, unfortunately. So we haven't got final word on that, what that will be, but when we get that, that'll also get rolled into our tentative budget. It won't really change. We're not going to our rate increase or anything like that. It'll probably just make less money go to employees, and we'll make a little bit more for capital projects. But
if they change,
I'm sorry to harden my disappointment, but it has been a little frustrating.
Yeah, that exactly didn't work because I specifically asked last month that is the 10% something that is influenced by the county, or is this where you think the market is? And you said this is what we believe. It wasn't.
We have.
So why would we change our position as a board on your recommendation for what the market will bear out there based on what the county's doing?
And my question would be, if the county changes our number, do we have to reapprove the budget? They can do whatever they want once we do approve. Okay.
Once you recommend it to them.
Basically, they didn't approve. They didn't approve our tentative budget because Roger wouldn't approve it. So
it was deemed.
It was deemed approved
by
her date.
The next day.
But I still believe that the budget that we requested, the COLA that we requested, is based on hard data. It is not just this wild ask. There are other districts and municipalities that are have approved more. We have data that shows the cost of living or the inflation rate in Summit County is 15%. And it's just the philosophy of some of the council members that.
Well, moving forward on this, when we get to the point that
we're under a rock,
what if the board came out next time and said, we're going to go with what the budget recommendation was because of what we think is in the best interest of the district? Do we get into a stalemate?
I mean, they have veto power. And we are not alone in this.
I'd rather have them veto it rather than have us come in there and say some lower amount. That's my own personal opinion on it.
I agree. And I think all the other districts and the county are doing the same thing. No one's saying it should be something less. Everyone has continued to say 10%. From the health department, Basin Rec, the fire department, Justin Martinez at the sheriff's office, everybody has gone in and said 10%, and nobody is saying anything
less.
Well,
it makes it sound as though we didn't give any thought to it. They were just throwing something
out there. The only thing he's kind of gotten a thumbs up right now on is the sheriff's department. Everyone else has got a 8-7. We'll do a lower COLA, but maybe a 3% merit, and then maybe some type of bonus. And that's just philosophy. And unfortunately, Doug Fly has resigned, and he got it. He said, "Look, this is what your data tells you. This is what the hard facts are." I don't know if we've lost that fight, but we'll
lose it if we go in with the lower amount on the recommendation.
I wouldn't recommend that you do.
We're going to make them tell us that's what we have to do. We're not going to ever recommend it.
Yep.
So they have to create
a concern
Fusco.
Yeah, we're not going to.
The only change Steve will make when we present again is the capital budget adjustment that you approved tonight. That will be the only change we'll say our board has made since we left.
1%, the difference between 8% and 10% is $79,000. On a $10 million budget, that's 0.00.
Well, look at that. We're looking at what it looks like to the people that are bringing the paycheck home.
Yeah. And unfortunately, that philosophy is not shared at the council level.
Mike?
Yeah. Hey, do we have a sense of what the county wants?
Less.
Zero.
Well, it's just the council.
Well, and just the council and not all the council members. There was definitely a division amongst the council members, which I think I commented on an email that's been a little bit about.
Was it like 50-50? Was it one council member?
Doug and Glenn
approved
it. Roger was definitely on a different page.
And he swayed Melina.
And Chris and Melina are in the middle. But leaning towards Roger.
Unless you bring us back something else that's different information than we got, then I think we're standing back.
Yeah, our decision is still valid.
Yes,
but it's final.
Yeah.
That's okay. But make someone else say no.
So that's the update on the tentative budget. So we will change the capital budget portion of it and give that to them again, but we're not touching this, but they may not approve it. The COLA merit. All right. I think I'm done.
Yeah.
Thank you.
When do we find out?
December 7th.
December 7th.
And we have a board meeting on the 8th.
9th.
Oh, or no.
No, the next 8th. It's
the next 8th.
Weaver Basin Council and...
Yes, sorry. One Thursday.
Yeah, 6th, 7th, and 8th.
They might let us know before, but it might be as late as that night.
They don't meet again until November 30th.
Yeah.
Okay.
Does the board ever send opinions to the council?
I see.
Is there precedent for that?
Well, I will tell you what I suggested.
Like we didn't we have to all have to go to the library? We were protesting something in December a few years ago. It was
the water sell water in a summit.
Yeah,
that was the last.
Yes.
Sorry. On the board meeting. When's our next board meeting? I've got the 15th of December.
Last month, we asked that we move that up a week to the 8th.
In the packet.
Thank you. I'm going to do that right now.
Okay.
Right now. I'll forget.
Hey, if there is precedent for us providing our opinion, which I would support once we find out what their position is.
Yeah, we should go to that council meeting.
Yep.
We suggested all of our employees come too.
Maybe some county employees. Some fire district employees. It could be a really crowded meeting on the summer.
Yeah. And there's public input?
Yes, these are all public hearings because it's after 6 and it's budget.
Department.
Yeah.
You go, it's not on that. It's
okay, our annual fraud risk assessment. This is a requirement. It's just a requirement that the district staff present our fraud risk assessment to the board annually. This has not changed. What the format or the responses have not changed from last year. There's no action that needs to happen. It's essentially just a repeat of what we had last year because we have not changed any internal controls. So you don't need to make a motion. You can ask questions if you have any questions. Otherwise, we just have to say we presented it and it was in a board packet and we agended it.
It's the same issues we had prior.
It's the same.
We're not big enough to institute those.
An internal audit.
Yeah.
And our whole board is the finance committee, yeah, essentially, because we're so small. Yeah.
Cruise down so we can see the rest of this. Okay, yeah. Okay, here, keep going.
You want the final form, Mike?
No. Okay. This is good.
It just reminds us that we have to be vigilant when we're reviewing the check register because we're the last one to do that.
Yeah.
As far as that goes.
This looks just fine.
And even if we doubled in size, we probably wouldn't have an audit committee.
And we talked to Dave last time after the meeting, and he said that he actually helped write this, I guess, right?
Yeah. He helped put it together, and it's really targeted for when you start getting hundreds of millions of dollars to really be able to fully complete everything they have.
I think what's important to me is what you have with regards to those credit card expenses that are on there. You have your own internal process for checking those because it's near impossible for me to take a look at that and see if it makes any sense. There is more explanation on there than there has been in the past, and I do scan through those, but as long as you're doing that cross-checking internally.
Yeah, because fortunately that goes through several eyes before it finally is approved from their supervisor to Sharon, our accountant, getting receipts and asking questions through to me. Andy and Lisa have access to it. So it does get a good view. And we have tried to change the register to any one credit card charge over $1,000, you may have noticed, is now broken out as its own description. Mm-hmm. So there's not any charge over 1,000 that isn't a big
It's a good process.
Invoices
run the same way too. It's approved by the department head to Sharon and Steve to me.
And Tim, your comment about the descriptions improving, I think that's a good one. I've definitely noticed that. Like, the descriptions are a lot better than years ago, so it's much easier to go through the register. Thank you.
Okay. There's a few questions.
We'll still ask questions.
Drug testing.
I feel hard.
Drug testing.
That's okay. It's a rolling game for us to decide which ones on the check register you're going to ask about.
Yeah.
Steve is uncanny about that one.
Christmas is coming quicker and quicker, and so is Thanksgiving, and so is the sit away. The payment for dinner lesson.
But one of the things, though, is I ask that not get buried in the budget. I want people to see that there is this crazy agreement out there that they'll pay $10,000 a year.
Okay, so let's see the survey.
Okay. I'll just go through these really quick. You all got to look at them in your packet. So just a few highlights. I think that first slide, it just kind of shows, compared to last year, our numbers for how familiar are you with Mountain Regional Water have gone up. So in that 4 or 5 category, we went from 45.7% to 53%. I'm happy with that, with engaging Pennant Powers to help us with the drought communications. I think we did a lot to try to reach more of our customers. So I feel like that was a good metric to look at. I think the bar charts there, the graphs, generally, largely those were the same as last year. Dependability of water service really stands out as a very significant 5, which I think is great. It did last year. Quality of water gets a little, mixed reviews. The blue on the responsiveness, I think that's just largely indicating people haven't had leaks. So there, it's an NA for them. But still, it looks like, information and express bill pay are trending in the right direction. So I was happy with all that. I think this was a telling pie chart. 71% don't know what Everbridge is. So we definitely have some education work to do there. And the customer service team and I are going to work on that over the winter to try to reach more people. We have some ideas that we're working on. The next slide, Chris. Ion Water, 37%. I don't know what Ion Water is. This is kind of because we about have 50-50 that are on and not on. So that kind of makes sense to me. Anna and her team did a targeted push on an email blast a couple weeks ago, and we had a significant uptick in signups for Ion Water. So that was good. I think, what did we go from, Anna, the percentages?
We went from 47 to 53%.
Yeah.
Pretty good. So 32
people signed up. That's pretty good with an email. So I think we'll need to do something similar with Everbridge and just try to get the word out a little bit more. So we're working on those things. This is how satisfied you were with drought communications. I feel like we really hit those 4 and 5s as, very satisfied. So I feel good that we communicated. There were obviously customer comments that we thought we could improve on. I know, one of them was you were a little slow to get to the, us the information. And I understand that we were kind of relying on Weber Basin, this being our first time going through this and initiating our drought response plan. Next year, maybe we can do that a little more timely, but, all of us kind of going through this for the first time, I could understand their frustration potentially there. So, but overall, I thought that was okay. Keep going, Chris. This was interesting. Did you need to make any changes? About half people said yes, half people said no, kind of what we expected. And then next, what if you answered yes, did you feel like it was reasonable? And 67.6% said they felt it was reasonable. So I think our community is largely agreeable to the changes we've made and what we've instituted, which I think is just going to be helpful going forward as we're likely going to have to do more. keep going, Chris. And I guess that was it. Then I just provided all the comments that everybody gave. A lot of it was localscape, providing zeroscape information. So I'm looking forward to working on this Cash for Grass program with Weaver Basin and getting Flip the Strip and getting some of these programs out there that people are working on. Andy went to a conference this week. He can talk to you about it. But I think we have some more collaboration to do with other agencies to help spread the message. And I'm looking forward to some, I think, some good events that we're thinking about maybe holding next year. So, yeah. Oh, damn.
That turf removal. Yeah.
Turf removal. Yeah, that was a little bit mixed, but everybody, you know, I guess wouldn't be interested, 37%, but the rest would be interested at different dollar amounts. So I think that will be, you know, something that some people will take advantage of. And nobody knew what PFAS was, so no one read our newsletter. But we'll work on the communication. Everybody wants email and largely quarterly.
There's already a give back program. Inside the newspaper, bring old ski wax in.
Oh, yeah.
But you're taking all of it.
I hope everybody gets all their fast ski wax.
You're keeping yours, yeah.
That way, they reduce the amount of it.
Okay. That's it. So, any questions or comments or concerns, anything?
So, the recommendations for improvement, there are some zingers. One was complaining about a bill being $100 a month. That just strikes me as odd. But then the best one was most expensive water in America.
I know.
So where does that come from?
Cole Kaepner.
Anna definitely could trace back who a lot of these people are. And these aren't new to the customer service team. And we reached out to everyone that had a legitimate, I can't get on Express Bill Pay, or I think it works terrible. Anna and her team reached out to everyone that we could immediately address a concern with and talk to them. So yeah, you're going to get people that, or I didn't get any drought communications. And I'm like, I don't know, because we've sent so many newsletters, emails, we pushed on Everbridge. I mean, like, we tried to reach everybody that we could. So
yeah, social media. Yeah.
Social media. We had Pen of Powers. We sent flyers in the mail. We've sent, you know, postcards.
They were under a rock.
You know, all I have to do is go over to Park City and it's higher.
Where that came from.
Yeah. But yeah, research.
There's another water provider in the basin that's rumored to have a 49% rate increase. And if it's okay, I'm going to just talk a little bit about the conference that I spent the last 3 days at. There was a conference that was put together with the Utah State Extension. It brought together land planners. So we had planning from Summit County, Clint McAfee from the city, Jess Kirby from Summit, Open Space, she worked for the county. We were supposed to have an elected official, and we had hoped that the acting county manager was there, but they had conflict. But just brought us all together along with Sandy City, Provo City, Layton, Weber County, and us. There were five of us. We just had an opportunity to collaborate on what are the things that we're facing, because this is not just a Summit County problem. It's a Utah problem. That, you know, do people really realize that if the Great Salt Lake dries up, what effect will it have on Summit County? It's not a Wasatch Front issue. It's an entire state issue that if dust collects, it ends up on the ski runs. And I can't remember what the term is, but the powder's on the snow. It has a solar effect. So the
albedo.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You know, that is something that will have a direct effect on us. And, you know, Summit County is the home to the seven of the headwaters in the state. It's a big deal about what we do here in Summit County. And we talked about how do we deal with east-west Summit County issues. So hopefully we'll build a collaboration, SB 110. The county has to do their general plan. They have to make modifications. Water needs to be a big part of that. And then Sandy City did a survey of 2,400 questions, and some of the basic questions they had was, do you know how much water you use? And do you know how much you pay for water? Because some people just don't know that. So it's just getting down to the basics. So it was really
a good opportunity just to make some mingle. Kelly Coop, who lives over in Jeremy Rand, she presented with us up at Promontory earlier this summer. She is really big into sustainable, smart landscaping. You know, the term zero scape has a negative connotation. So everyone now is saying local scape. What does that mean? One of the things with artificial turf that Harriman is facing is, when you think of artificial turf, what color do you think of?
Green.
But is it possible to have a purple artificial turf lawn or a yellow artificial turf lawn?
Sure.
Right? So those are the things that they're not thinking through those consequences and saying, yeah, you can go do artificial turf. But if Tim decides to put it in purple, you know, is that really what the intention is? So,
and it used to be that it took lead to make it green, which is, you know, obviously.
And it retains heat.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So there's other issues. So anyway, this will be hopefully the beginning of a dialogue for an ongoing. So it was beneficial. So I'm supposed to be getting a whole slide deck and everything sent. So I'm happy to share the information that was shared with me.
So Andy, at the end of the day, if someone makes a decision that they want to pump more water into the Great Salt Lake, is that something that comes to Weaver Basin? Do they make that decision on how much they're going to give out, or is it something that these water users weigh in on?
Yeah, I mean, all of the major water users in this part of the state are weighing in on that, and you're seeing a shift on Weaver getting water from Central Water so they can release water into Willard Bay. I mean, it's just a whole management of water resources right now to try to keep water. And the economic impact of not having that lake, from brine shrimp to magnesium. And so one of the things that we came away with from the conference is the new slogan is make Salt Lake great again.
No. Well, I just objected to the magnesium plant like taking another 9 feet out of the Great Salt Lake every weekend. So,
does anybody have any idea how much retention of water there is in the Uintas on a typical year, like compared to what they hold in the reservoirs? Is it like four times what the reservoirs hold, or 10
times? I don't know that one.
Because with warming temperature, there's going to be less snow, but little rain.
Yes.
And all that dust that goes out, it collects on the Uintas, and it starts multiplying as it melts and gets darker. And so if we don't have the water, if we can't pound the water that's coming down there, it's got to go through, and it's going to fill up the Great Salt Lake.
Is it?
Well, so like a lot of the long-term climate models for this part of the Mountain West, there's not good consistency, one, but one of the projections they do have with the warming scenarios that do seem to align is snow line will go up, elevation of where your snowpack is going to be. There will be more rain events through the winter. They're expecting less surface water runoff, so reservoirs are going to take a hit, but they're expecting groundwater to stay the same or slightly improve. And that kind of makes sense. If you don't have frozen ground, you're not holding water in the snowpack, you're not going to have runoff events filling the reservoirs. It's infiltrated. So there could be, you know, the importance of groundwater and maintaining it in a sustainable fashion. If it's not going to significantly increase, and it can't replace reservoirs, right? I mean, it's great that it's going to hold its own or maybe improve a little bit, but it can't replace reservoirs. So having sustainable yields from all of your aquifers is massively important. If those projections are correct.
Less snow in the rain.
Yeah. Is that okay to go to 14?
Absolutely.
Yes, sir.
In the packet, I sent a memo requesting for your consideration, a $1,500 bonus for all staff. Those are the staff that have not been here for the full year will just get a prorated amount. And I'm happy to answer any questions about the things that have been accomplished. And I'd also like to read an email that I received today.
if that's okay.
It was an impressive list. I don't know if there was anything on there with regards to the feedback that we saw earlier.
The customer survey?
The customer service. Is that in that list? I didn't remember seeing that. That's
a good point.
That's something you should have in there, because that's kind of a measure at the end of the day, too, about how the whole organization's collectively working.
And then remind me, we currently have a cap on the bonus. We can't recommend more than 1,500. Is that correct?
That is per policy.
Yeah, 1,500 is the max.
We changed that 2 years ago.
Yeah. 2 years ago. So last year, 1,500 was recommended and approved. Yep. So we're asking the same this year.
Okay. I'd like to also read this email I received today. It's from Dr. Linda Patricia Miller up on Ranch Club Trail. Hi, Andy. I just want to recognize Stacy for the help she provided us with the inspections on our property. We are new to this end. In addition to trying to figure out who to call and what to do, we had consecutive and relapse bout of COVID in everyone in our family. Stacy was gracious in extending our deadline until we could safely have someone come into our house. She also guided us through the process professionally and patiently. She was courteous, as one would expect from customer service representative, but she was also kind and understanding and took one worry off us at this difficult time. I hope that she is recognized for her service, the community, and her positive attitude and helpfulness.
I think we should give her 1,500.
it's not something that we always receive the feedback.
That's
so it's nice that she did take time to do that.
Yep.
I wish I could give you more examples, but I can tell you the dedication of the employees of Summit Water. Regional.
Wait,
wherever I am at, there's 10,000 backflows. but I'll tell you, this past weekend there was a leak up in Summit Park, and two of our more experienced operators were not available. Jackson, Jake Olderman, and Waylon all stepped up. It was cold. It was wet. There was a piece of conduit in the road flowing water uphill. It made it look like that's where the leak was. The leak really wasn't there, but they did a great job. And that's, I mean, when people think of first responders, everyone refers to fire departments and police departments, but the people here truly are first responders. And so.
And not only that, Andy was out there the whole time mailing.
It's not a good one.
Yeah.
So I'm asking for your approval of this.
Well, I would like a motion.
I move that we approve the $1,500 per employee for the next 2022 bonus.
Yes. Second that.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Mike?
Aye.
Okay, aye. Gannaman?
Did you put the pictures of
well deserved, guys? Well deserved.
Thank you.
That was a pretty good list.
I think 17 might be our max. I mean, I think the most I've ever seen.
It was a lay that.
Yeah. I think we do have it. Oh, no, we have department updates. I know we do have executive.
We have compensations.
The ransom thing was last year, right?
Yes.
Thank God.
But we, yeah.
Okay, does anyone have any questions on the department update?
Yes.
I have one. Just on this lead and copper thing, is copper bad just because it could have lead solder or like a joint?
That's a really good question. Lead and copper are regulated under the same piece of legislation for EPA. And there's not a health-based reason for that. It's because there were indicators of how corrosive the water was in your distribution system previously, before, you know, the health impacts and everything we've learned about lead really came into focus. So now changes to the lead and copper rule are targeting the health impacts, but it's still the lead and copper rule.
Gotcha. So it's really only lead that we're worried about.
Yeah.
Environmentally, though, copper kind of slips under the radar, but like, for invertebrates and plant species, it can block off gill structures and prevent oxidation like really fast. It's one of the first constituents to like knock out
you know, living populations and fresh water. And from a mineral acidity standpoint, copper helps significantly with iron and aluminum. And as that shift changes, your uptake goes through. It's kind of an enabler. And so it's, yeah, I agree with everything BPA joined.
Yeah, great. And we do have to go into executive session.
Yes. Right? If we agree.
Do we have a motion to go into?
Motion to go into executive session.
Okay.
So I agree.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
So now we're back in session. I move to adjourn. So I need to take my beer to that.
I don't think we need it. You need a motion to adjourn?
Hopefully not. So let's
I think we usually
right. So yeah, motion to you said we normally do, Mike, right?
I thought so, okay. But I
guess okay, just, so,
if there's not any other
formal motion, so, yeah. Motion to adjourn.
Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we stand adjourned at 8:13.